Five, four, three, two, one.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
All right, that's pretty good. That's the best one yet.
Pizza, pizza.
I use the bathroom.
When you were making egg foo young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a limousine tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cats, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no fuddy-duddies that a Lincoln bath. But the strong thing, go direct to DLNTS.org. And IC channels at LinuxLink.net. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, cause the cats are just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 918 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Pat.
What's up?
We have Joe.
Hello.
And lurking somewhere in the background is Joel, but I think he's...
Yes, I'm right here.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if you were still on your work issue or what. But there we go. Happy... middle of the August, everybody. Did you want to go ahead and go on your topics, Joel, or are you still busy?
Guys, go ahead and chat for a minute, and then I'll get on to it.
Oh, well, thank you. Again, Joel, with his permission, right?
Just as long as you remember when he gets back, whenever that is, it's his turn.
Yeah. Absolutely. Man, I'll tell you what. One of the things that I've been noticing with cloud services is that if you don't play with the big boys, there's a lot of third-party stuff that just ain't going to suit for you. You know what I mean? Like, and by the big boy, I probably mean the biggest boy, and that's Amazon. And so many times have I now encountered when working with a third-party vendor, not Amazon, not our internal stuff, but working with another party, they have support for doing something that is primarily AWS and nothing else. Two examples of that. When I was looking at Couchbase backups, the newest version of Couchbase does incremental backups and has the option to upload to cloud storage so long as that cloud storage is AWS. There might be ways to get around it, but pretty much they only support AWS. And the same thing today I was looking at with WordPress VIP. You can get the access logs, the HTTP access logs, shipped to AWS cloud storage, S3 bucket. But nothing, like there's no other way to do anything else because they have it. Like if you're using AWS... and you have a bucket, it's dead simple to get this stuff done, right? But we don't use AWS. We're 100% into Google, so we use Google Cloud Storage buckets. And while they have an API and an interoperability API with S3 that you could kind of swap it out, and that's more for, like, your project, although I don't know – I'm trying to think in my head, in what scenario would I swap out a S3 bucket for a Google bucket in an application code that I have access to? I would use the actual Google clients as opposed to continuing to use the S3. And I could see some maybe interim cases there where, hey, you're really – it's in production. You want to get this going, testing it out, but you don't want to completely overhaul the code with new modules or whatever it is, drivers and everything. That if you could do it this way, hey, we'll do it. I don't think that's the ideal way. But in order for you to do what you need to do to replace an S3 bucket with Google Cloud Storage using the an interoperability API is that at the base core, you need to swap out the URL to the API. Instead of it being Amazon's URL, it has to be Google's Cloud Storage API as to where it's trying to reach out and communicate with. And then it has to use an HMAC key for authentication, both of which are not configurable on a lot of the third-party services. VIP, WordPress VIP, is wonderful. You just tell them the name of your bucket, and then you click a button, and it produces this access policy that you apply on your end. So they have it all set up. You know, all you have to do is then just apply this access policy to the bucket, and boom, you're off to the races. Well, you know, you can't do that for Google Cloud Storage. And so it just makes it a little bit of a pain in the ass. But that's the price you got to pay, you know? When you're using cloud services like that, there's always going to be, it's just like back in the days of desktop operating systems, there's that 800-pound gorilla that everybody conforms to, and everybody else is kind of, you know, trying to get a piece of that pie, and you're lucky if some service is supported or not. Right, Joe?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, and here you go. Basically, it's the old adage. Remember, the old adage used to be, nobody got fired for buying IBM.
Yeah, nobody gets fired for using AWS.
Nobody gets fired for buying AWS.
But that's right in your wheelhouse, though, Joel. You're loving the AWS, and I like AWS too. It's just I don't. We've settled on Google, so.
Yeah, I mean, really, I think the biggest problem there is, and it's kind of also another problem with that I've noticed that I'll get into later. But the biggest problem with the cloud services is there's no real standard. You know, it's like there's Amazon standard, there's Google standard, and there's Microsoft standard. That's the three main players in the cloud hosting area. So, you know, you literally have to have tools that work with both. Like, for example, well, hey, GitOps should work with both. And we're actually going to be going to, I don't know when we're going to start working with containers, but basically we will be using ZapCD for containers.
What is that? You
know, basically, it's basically Kubernetes, I think, because that's essentially what we're going to be doing is Kubernetes over AWS. So instead of the probably in my the thing holding our team up right now is the way we do our upgrades. Even if we had them automated, which actually we can't right now, not without some changes from R&D. We use install shields to install and upgrade from one version to the next. And unfortunately, the install shields do not have like a touch-free, where I can basically slam it in a script with some flags telling it where I wanted to go and be done with it, you know. So you have to run the install shield. You have to put in a customer number and a customer password. And then so on and so forth in order to get those upgraded. So when you move to containers, you can't SSH to it. You can't actually RDP into it if it's a Windows box, because Windows can run in containers too now. So
you can get into a container. I do it all the time.
Well, you're not, put it this way, you're not supposed to.
Well, I mean, I can connect to a running. You right. Can easily connect to a running container.
Right, but so you know, some of the things that we do now, like we actually for our nonprofits, we actually let customers have access to them because they like to customize stuff, whether it's a good idea or not. And then, of course, then we run into incidents like I had today where. This is not with a website, but with code in the core system, where they basically wrote a screen that will connect to. We have our product has a SFTP subroutine in it, right?
Right.
And there's a parameter screen called SFTP is the name of the parameter screen where you go in and you put your credentials in. You can put your path to your key if you're going to use a key for SFTP instead of a username password and all that stuff. Well, a customer, they wrote a custom process. And the custom process, instead of pointing to production, the production definition, it pointed to a test definition, and it was failing in production because, you know, they never made the change to the code. So we had to go and alter the test one and put the production information in the test one in the production environment just to make it work because the client messed up. But so, because we're in a unique situation, we're our team is in SaaS. We are managed cloud, which means they can have customizations in managed cloud. So that in SaaS team, you're not allowed to have customizations. The only customizations you might have is adjusting security within the web pieces and stuff like that. And they actually built their own synchronization kind of software to synchronize the sitemap from one server to the next. So, but when you're in managed cloud like I am, you have a case where you have the customers have the ability to upgrade their own websites in non-prod. Once they do it in non-prod, we have to figure out how we do it in prod. But that's my day was just watching. It was pretty much capped off by customers shooting themselves in the foot multiple times.
What was the name of that service you were talking about? ZAPCD?
ZAPPCD.
Oh, okay.
Named after Zap Brannigan.
Why am I not finding it? Is it two words?
Actually, that might be for the pipelines to work with containers.
Oh.
Possibly. I don't know a lot about it yet.
Oh.
The banner teams, the other product team is starting to use that for their product. We're, like I said, we're a ways off before we can use containers and manage containers, and we are working with pipelines, code pipelines, so that we, hopefully we can automate things a bit faster. Like, for example, we can multi-thread our deployment so that it doesn't take as long for the Jenkins jobs can take a while to run, but when we end up having to go to when we go to pipelines, well, the alternative basically running things multi-threaded so we can do two things at one time and thus saving us time. So, but I'm with you on the AWS stuff. You know, it's really, really, like I said, there's no standard. There's no standard where you can just say, okay, take out the AWS S name and put in the Azure name, your server name, and you're done with it. And it's all deployed the same way. No. Or then you have a case of AWS where they have their nice kitschy name for DNS called Route 53. So, and Route 53 is one of the few that's has no zone. It's across all the availability zones. So, and I even know what an availability zone is now. Now that I achieved my certification earlier this year.
That's a good thing there.
Yeah, I'm getting used to trying to do some things the AWS or GitOps way versus just doing things manually. Like a few weeks ago, we had a client who had an engagement, and they hadn't had their production at, or non-production, what we call the EMA or Aleutian Messaging Adapter. It's essentially a WAR file that its job is kind of to help retrieve stuff from Rabbit and send it back to Colleague with a, in our case, it's an Envision data exchange, which is also another proprietary thing. So what we had to do was we had to deploy Tomcat via Jenkins. All right. So I had to late night when working with our main cloud engineer folks. That's there. We have our dedicated cloud engineer team that's dedicated to our product, and I was working with them and helping them approve PRs and to get that installed. I was testing the PR and non-prod to make sure it worked in Jenkins, you know. So finally got that working, and we did the same thing in production, so we got them all set up. So but I had my experience of approving pull requests out of GitOps, so fun stuff. But in the last week or two, I've been working mostly on trying to bring up some of our new folks that have colleague experience but need to learn the our ways of doing things. So I've been doing a lot of training lately.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So what are your rants here? Oh, you know what?
My rant.
Wait, what's that? What was I going to say? I was going to say something that was related to the topic before you can go on your rant, but now, oh, I know what it was going to be. I'll save it. I'll save it till you're finished.
Sure. So, well, we'll start off with something that's not a rant. I'm currently on my YogaBook 7.10 running full up Ubuntu, whatever the latest, not long-term release, but the latest release is. Yeah, I mentioned probably, I don't know, I think I talked about it a few shows ago where I thought my battery was puffed out. Well, I ordered the parts Monday, and they came today, and I took it apart, and yeah, that battery was really puffed out. I had to get a set of micro tools to undo it. And of course, you know, I putting it back together, I lost one of the screws in the carpet somewhere, so hopefully I find that, but just one screw. All the rest of them I have. But and then there's always that one screw inside, because basically I had to remove all the screws on the bottom, which are all T5. They're like 3 millimeter Torx screws, very small. And once you remove the bottom, it puffed up enough I didn't really even need to use the spudger to get it open, because this laptop's pretty thin anyway. And popped that up, and of course always there's four screws on the battery, and there's always one that you would pretty much dang near have to strip out in order to get the Loctite loose. But I did get it out, got the new battery put in. The new battery was $45. And put everything back together, and it looks like it's working. If I unplug it, it tells me Ubuntu predicts I have 13 hours of battery life, which we know that's just a prediction, but it's working well, and I'll probably be using this for the show from now on. So I think it's going to work a little bit better, and I can probably at some point in the near future, I actually should be getting a referral bonus for one of our new people, because I referred them, so I should be getting a bonus for that. And my plan then is to get a new laptop for my not Windows, but Creative Cloud stuff. So it may not be Windows. I might get a MacBook instead. But And then I'll ditch some of my other older machines. Since I have this one for the show, it takes up a lot less space than my old 17-inch beast. So that's one tech story. Replacing the battery was not too bad. About the only thing I'd love it. And this is kind of my beef with modern laptops is now the easily replaceable battery. Like they used to, remember when they used laptops? Well, like my work laptop actually does, but if you buy anything slim, or thin, the it's gonna be a crapshoot on whether you can actually replace the battery.
Did they get
fix?
What were you saying there? Because you cut out.
I said this laptop I have, I got lucky and it was a pretty easy fix. But a lot of new laptops now, they're going to be difficult to fix or maybe even impossible without destroying some things. But Joe knows all about destroying things when repairing things.
Oh, it's happened once or twice. A couple times.
But it makes me wish that all laptops had replaceable batteries, but that's that same thing with phones, really.
Well, all laptops do have replaceable batteries. It just matter of how much do you want it.
Yeah. Well, the way I figured too, I'm only going to replace this battery once, so the next time it puffs out, the laptop's going to be too damn slow anyway. You know, so. You know, just because it's a laptop from 2016, okay? So it's pretty old as it is now. But it still works well and actually has a pretty decent little graphics card in it. So there's no use putting it out to pasture right now. But in fact, it ran Windows 10 just fine too. But I don't know if it ran Windows 11. But anyway, but I also brought up phones, which kind of brings up my next. This is the more proper rant. The current news about the Pixel 6, I don't think they've actually had a full-up announcement yet. Google has. But they are not going to be shipping a charger in the box, just like they do with the iPhone 12 right now. The only thing you get in the box is you get a cable.
Profits.
Well, you know, Google's excuse there is that everyone has those chargers. I'm like, so fucking what?
So they're not
guitars that don't come with guitar cases, right? Though.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, some of them are like, well, don't. You should have those. I'm like, it doesn't. Okay, it's like selling you a car without tires, okay? Because, well, you should have tires from your old car, right? You can just put those on the new car, right? Doesn't work that way, you know. This is another thing that I noticed too. I bought a shop vac to clean out my pellet grill because it'll get some ashes and stuff in the burn pot, okay. And I was looking at getting a cordless one, and they had a cordless one. It was a Craftsman cordless wet dry vac. Okay, I almost bought. Then on the side of the box, I noticed it says batteries not included. And I thought, well, what does this take? Like D cells or what? No, it takes a lithium ion cell, but you have to either have like a tool that has that pack. Like for example. You could buy a drill, and I almost went there because they had a cordless drill, which has and uses this universal V-Power, I think it's V-Power, I'm not sure, battery pack. So the drill and the shop vac and any other tools you buy in this particular line of tools uses the same battery pack, okay? But the vacuum doesn't come with one. Only the drill did. And to buy a charger and battery set is $90. Needless to say, I went back, bought the probably $20 corded shop back. Let me also preface this. I actually have a larger shop back, but it's super huge, and it's also over in storage yet. I haven't brought it back yet. But I didn't really want to cart that out to the where the grill is at outside because it's kind of large. All right.
Yeah, how far away are you from an outlet?
It's not that far.
Having a cord, it doesn't really matter then, right?
No, it's not that far. I mean, I have to have a cord out there anyway for whenever, because the pellet grill does require power to drive the auger and to ignite the fire. It also has fans in it too. That's kind of how it works. So instead of having like a big long bar like a propane grill might have, it has one little fire pot, and that's where the pellets drop in from the auger, and the fan kind of circulates the air, the hot air around the grill, and heats the whole grill up. All right, so it's kind of a little bit like a convection oven, but also it's smoky too. Can be smoky too, because the pellets are made out of wood. So it's not a big long burner. So it's mostly just this barrel and then the little pot at the end of the auger. Where the auger will feed the pellets into the pot, and it does it at a pretty consistent rate. It's computer controlled. It's got its own board on it, and that's how it controls it. In fact, there's actually Wi-Fi in the controller board for this, so I can which is actually nicer than you might think, because it comes with a meat probe that you can plug into the, like if you're doing a roast or something, or steaks, I guess. You can plug that into the meat while it's cooking, and you can actually see the temperature of the meat from the phone, from the app on the phone, as well as the temperature that you've set on the grill. The other nice thing is you can also change the temperature from the app, as well as turn the grill off from the app. So kind of seems kind of crazy to need an app for your phone, but it actually works really well. And I actually wouldn't probably... going to be with pellet grills from now on, because I do like it, and it does make the meat taste good. I did get a smoke tube, but I think I need to get a propane torch to help light that up to truly get the smoke going. But because once the grill gets up to temp, there's not a lot of smoke, it's just heat. So in order to get smoke, you have to turn the grill down pretty low. So if you're kind of, which it's low, low by like 180 degrees Fahrenheit. So, which is not quite enough to cook the meat thoroughly, but is enough to give the meat flavor, you know, if you smoke it for about, you know, 20, 30 minutes, which is really all you need to do, because that's when the meat gets the flavor from the smoke the most.
Well,
so.
Wow, I can't even add more innuendo to any of that.
but it's like, back to the phone chargers, though. Apple started it with the iPhone 12, and Google, and well, now Samsung too. If you buy the latest Samsung phones, usually the flag. That's the thing I don't get is they're doing it with flagship phones, and they're not doing it with, you buy a low end phone, get a charger. Buy a flagship, you're not getting a charger. It seems kind of bass ackwards to me. You know, it's not like it costs a lot of money for a charger. With that said, though, if you are one of those people that buy a phone that doesn't come with a charger, one, I do have a recommendation. I've got three of them now, and I'm probably going to buy some more. I bought the Anker Nano Chargers, which is basically like a little cube with the USB-C. on one side on the end of it. So you just use the USB-C to USB-C to charge the phone. And they are wonderful. They're 20 watt chargers. They will charge my Galaxy Note 10 Plus at fast rates. It even charges my iPad too. So and they're $13. So they're not expensive. So in case you need some extra ones, go get it. And I still have to keep waiting for my 200 watt multi USB-C charger. Because I think if you buy, if they had four USB-C ports, you'd probably need at least 200 watts to get good charge rates out of all of them.
When is that coming?
Lord only knows. I've been looking for that forever, ever since the Raspberry Pi 4 is the first one that had USB-C for the power. I've been looking for them for one of those ever since the Raspberry Pi 4 came out.
Oh wait, so where did you buy it?
The Anker Nano.
The what?
No, I didn't buy a 4-port USB-C charger. They don't make one.
Oh. I thought you said you found one and that you did buy one.
No, then, I'm looking for one, and if I find one, I'm gonna buy it. It's one of those things I wish they made, but they don't. The Anker Nano is a pretty good charger, but and in retro news, I want to bring up
how much this you want to pay for it.
I don't know. Whatever they want, it's like a take my money kind of thing. Almost.
Oh, you want it just pure USB-C, right?
Yeah, USB-C. Four.
So you're looking, yeah, because there's one with three USB-C.
One with two.
I see Anker one with three, and then there's a USB-A. So it's like, why? Why do you need to put a USB-A in there? Why can't you just have all of them be USB-C?
That's a very good question. But at least the Nano is going to cost you between $17 and $15, depending on I think I got one on sale for $13, and then you get two pack of the Nanos for $30. But then they have, let's see. Well, here's one for $109. It has two USB-C and two USB-A ports.
For how much?
$100.
I'm looking at them for, the one that has three USB-C and one USB-A was, $50.
Yep. Well, and you can't even get one where they have all the ports with the, what was that, the Quick Charge 3? Qualcomm Quick Charge 3. You can't get one where all the ports are that. It's either one or two of the ports at most on a multi-charger that has that. So, because I do have a multi-charger on my side of the bed. My wife has one on her side of the bed. I have one in my office because it's just nice to have all the ports. Just like, for example, up here I use
one in practically every room of the house.
Yes, practically. Only my son doesn't have a multi-charger, but
what's he waiting for? All the kids are doing it.
He does have a Sleep Number bed, so we have two of those beds in our house now. Beds with Wi-Fi.
So you need your multi-charger also has to have the wattage there to support the Raspberry Pi, doesn't it?
Yep.
And that's what you want a USB 4-port C charger, that has the wattage to support a Raspberry Pi, that's a pipe dream, man. That ain't never
on all happen. Ports, yeah. That, and you're right, it is. Nobody makes it yet. Because I'd love to do that, but, you know, because then I could do some Kubernetes clusters across the Pi, which would be nice. But how many of you guys, do any of you guys watch the 8-Bit Guy?
Nope, can't say
I've
as I do.
I've seen the 8-Bit Guy. What about it?
Well, he had a really good video this week where he, and I think this is going to be available by purchase somewhere, I hope. But he built a VIC-20 from parts in a board. Basically, the way it works is it's a kit. And comes with a keyboard, too, with custom keycaps with the PETS key characters on them.
If you and live in a qualified zip code, you may be eligible to receive USA-made solar panels for...
Oh, please.
Sorry.
Oh, it must be, you must have been trying to look at his page, and you don't have your YouTube Premium.
No, I do not have YouTube Premium, and I didn't have it muted, and I didn't get the chance to skip the ad yet.
You must have been looking at the video there. It's building a VIC-20 kit, and the only thing you have to add to it, and this is the hard part, because the VIC-20 has the majority of the parts on the VIC-20 are available today for purchase still, brand new. So like a chip that's compatible with the 6502. Which is the chip that was in the VIC-20, the RAM chips, everything else you need to build it is pretty much openly available. The only thing that isn't is the VIC chip, the VIC, I think it's the VIC, one chip.
The 6560.
Yep. So you have to go find one of those somewhere, either, you know, find it on eBay, find an old, find a dead, VIC-20 that's not working and rip it, but the VIC chip's working and you can pull it out and plug it into this. So, but you know, it's
holy moly, he ain't kidding, you building it from scratch. I thought when he pulled it out it was like the board was already assembled. It's like you're soldering everything
in.
On that board, man.
Yep. But I'll tell you what, though. I'd rather solder a VIC-20 than I would want to solder this laptop I'm using right now with all the surface mount shit. I mean, you're talking about dual inline packages, which are so much easier to solder than... I mean, they're still... I will say, they still are not the easiest thing to solder. But they're not that bad. Well, you know, it's not as bad.
Surface mount soldering on newer laptops can be a pain in the ass.
Oh, yeah.
Unless, well, it makes it a little easier to have the proper tools, but even with the proper tools, it's still difficult because those tiny little capacitors and fuses start blowing heat on the board and everything starts flying everywhere.
Yep.
Yeah.
But, I mean, so imagine being able to build an 8-bit, brand new 8-bit computer.
Man, he makes it look so easy, too.
Oh, he's good. He's got lots of practice to putting it together. He's also, I think if you watch the video all the way through, his game he wrote, the Pets.
To get him again?
No, I stopped talking.
They got him. Where are you, Joel?
I stopped talking. I'm here.
Come back. We need you.
I am here.
Well, I guess we'll hear from him next week.
Hello,
so what have you been up to?
Great, who are you talking to?
You.
Anybody.
Me.
I'm here.
I was just watching this guy assemble this board. Yeah, I can hear you, Joe.
Okay. Dang it. You weren't supposed to tell him you could hear him.
So this comes with everything but the 6560.
Yep. Oh, there's the website from Dan Werner. So.
How much is it? How much can you? How much do they charge for a 6560 on the?
See, on the that's a good interwebs? Question. I'd love it if they did this with like the Atari 8-bits. But the problem with the Atari 8-bits is there's way too many custom chips in an Atari. Atari, you have the GTIA.
They're still licensing with the Atari.
Right. But with the Atari, you have the GTIA, the Pokey chip, and Freddy
I'm
chip.
I'm sure
as well.
That you could find replacements or substitutions.
Some of them you can probably reprogram, use a flip FPGA to make it.
No, if you could do Ataris. Yeah, I might. I might.
I don't know. The CTIA, which is the graphics chip in the Atari 2600, is pretty decent. Oh, in the keyboard, too, if you have an old VIC-20 keyboard that still works, you can actually take it out of the VIC-20 and put it in this, and it'll work.
Well, instead of having to assemble the keyboard all yourself, solder all the keys on there, too?
Yeah. Well, actually, I don't think you have to actually solder the keys. If I remember right. Did Dave do that? Okay.
Yeah, he did that. Yeah, he soldered all the keys onto that thing.
I must have missed that part. And you also can, as you look at the case on this, too, you can also clearly tell that the case is 3D printed. And it's 3D printed on a large format printer. I could not, without doing some assemblage, I could not 3D print this case on my current printer. It's too large. But
I mean, it looks really nice what he comes out with.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it almost looks like a VIC-20. Almost. Not quite, but actually, the one thing I like with this that's better than the VIC-20 is look where they put the cartridge slot instead of on the back. It's right
on
the
top.
Yeah,
no, it's like right at the top there.
Where it belongs. But yeah, he ran a bunch of things. In that same video, though, he also talked about he's wrote game modern. Well, I don't know if I would call it modern games, but he's wrote games for started out on the PET. Attack of the Petsky Robots, I think, is the name of his game he wrote. But he's also porting it. He's porting it to the Atari 8-bits as well. Which mine's still in storage. I gotta go get it yet. But they also had an update on the Commander X16 project, which is basically like his dream 8-bit machine with as much RAM as he can stick into something that old and all that. And for the most part, I believe the only thing that's holding things up is software now that the hardware revision is pretty much completed. They don't have to mess with the hardware anymore. They just got to do some more troubleshooting on the ROM that he's writing for it that runs the whole thing. And that's about it. And so once that's all trouble, two main problems. He tells you about that in the video. So, Commander X16, more and more as it's getting closer to the point where they're ready to sell it, I'm kind of thinking about buying one, just because I think it would be fun to play with. I'm not 100% sure if it can run like standard VIC-20 or C64 software, but it's interesting stuff. And then there's also another great 8-bit channel if you're into retro computing at all, in any extent is Retro Recipes with Parafactic, who's also a part of the Commander X16 project. And he had a video this week where he completely refurbed the Commodore 128, which is one I would say is probably one of the first dual CPU computers because it had both a 6502 compatible chip in it and a Zilog Z80. Because at some point they thought they might want.
Did you get him again?
I'm here.
You just like, it just sounds like
you keep cutting out mid-sentence and like don't finish whatever thought you're on.
I might be lifting up too early. But yeah, the Commodore 128 was a really interesting computer in the back in the day, and I never had one.
I didn't either. I didn't have a Commodore.
No, you had your TI.
I did.
TI-99-4A.
All the fours.
Without the PEB, because nobody bought the PEB. The peripheral expansion box.
That thing was expensive.
It was. Well, that's the thing. That's like when I was a kid, I had one. When I bought my current Atari 800XL, it came as a package, and it had a floppy drive with it. And I actually learned how to use it by using that, but it didn't last more than a week because, let's just face it, most floppy drives are going to be dying in need of repair, and it's usually got parts in it that you can't easily replace, like the belts. But the Atari floppy drive was always more expensive than the computer was, because it literally had a 6502 in it. So I mean, the Atari floppy drive was no joke. It was god awful expensive. I wish I had it working for longer, and had it working long enough to buy there is a kit that you basically can plug a SD card into it, and then it hooks up to the SIO port on the Atari, and you can save floppy images to it. Basically, you can create a floppy files using the controller on the board the SD card plugs in, and then you could write to them in the same way that you would write to a floppy disk on the Atari. So, and I think there's something similar for all of the old 8-bit machines, so that you can easily get stuff on and off it without having to have a functioning floppy drive. So eventually for my Atari, I'm going to get one of those boards. I'm also going to buy a new power supply, because the other problem with old power supplies is if there's any leaky caps in the power supply, you could potentially fry your computer. So, but I love me some retro computing. Mostly nostalgia.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yep. That's the same reason, like, you know, would I build a RetroPie arcade system, or would I buy an arcade 1-Up? I'm of the camp, I just want to buy the 1-Up and be done with it. If I can find one that has the game I like, a game I like in it.
What's the game you're looking for?
The Pac-Man one looks good. The Space Invader one also looks good. I have to see what other games are on the Space Invader one. But the Star Wars one would also be cool too, that to have too. The bad part is they're all right now. They're going to be kind of expensive. The best bet on those is to go, I would say, January or February to Walmart, because Walmart will usually get them for the Christmas season, and then they'll clear them out at the end of the Christmas season, so they'll sell them out for 50% off.
Uh-huh.
And there was, this past February, Ollie's Bargain Outlet, which is kind of like a Big Lots kind of deal where they'll buy closeouts and stuff.
Right.
They actually had some for $130, and they're normally around $300 or $400 at least. So that would have been a good deal. And they had the good selection from what I saw. But I also understand that they sold quick, too. And I know Sam's Club is going to get the... at Christmas time, Sam's will get the, usually get the Arcade Legends Ultimate, which is a full-size cabinet. Not the one-ups are a smaller cabinet. And the only problem with the Ultimate one is... Well, it's got Wi-Fi in it. It's actually designed so that you can stream games from your Xbox. You know, if you had the Xbox One, you can stream games and play games using the controls on it. But it also yeah, it has its own ROMs that's on it.
There's one called Multicade. Is that the one you're talking about?
No, this one is by At Games. At Games Legends Ultimate, I think, is the name of it. But it doesn't have... It has a lot of console... when I played with it at Sam's, the thing I noticed, it had like a lot of console games. So it had some NES games in it. Maybe some SNES games.
Okay, At Games Legends Ultimate.
Yeah, that's it.
And, arcade 1-Up Galaga Arcade Machine... No.
Nah, like, actually, that wouldn't be a bad one, but...
I don't want to play Galaga.
I like Galaga.
Awesome.
But Galaga is a great game. Always was.
Here you are talking smack about Galaga.
But
Creative Arcade's full-size cabinets arcade machine has one as well. 3,500 classic games. Including hit titles like Mortal Kombat, Robotron, Moonwalker, Space Ace, and Dragon's Lair.
Yeah. My problem with the Legends Ultimate is it doesn't really have very many arcade games. It's mostly console games.
...32-inch screen, 4-player, $3,400.
Now, they are, like, if you remember the, and this is the early 90s, if you're interested in the Simpsons arcade game, they are bringing that out in an arcade 1-up with 4 sticks.
I can't remember the Simpsons arcade game. I remember the Simpsons, a couple of the different Simpsons Nintendo games, like the paper delivery one.
Mm-hmm, the go-kart one, too.
Skateboarding one that wasn't the paper delivery one,
right? And... But the this was in an in the arcade in the 90s. We actually had one when I was in college, and it basically was like that early 90s period. They actually had a lot of 4-player stand-ups. Like that's when the X-Men arcade game came out with Cyclops and again, Storm and Valkyrie. Oh shoot, I can't remember all the characters.
Which one are you talking about?
That I played was the Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat, games.
Are you talking about the X-Men game that had like the 4 joysticks, like gauntlet style,
and
had
game.
Cyclops, Wolverine, Storm, Nightcrawler, yep. And I think Colossus were...
Yes. Colossus was in it, yeah. He was my favorite character in the game. The Simpsons one was very similarly themed. Had 4 sticks, and you can be Bart, Lisa...
Maggie.
Maggie. I don't know if you could
be
Maggie.
Wait, not Maggie. Was it? It was Marge and Homer, wasn't it?
Marge and Homer, yeah. Yep, and it had as you go along, I think it had a level thing where you went to Moe's and one where you messed around with the in the park where the Jedediah Springfield statue was. The one I remember on the GameCube was the Simpsons. Oh crap! It was a kart racing game. I can't even remember the name of it. Thank you.
Yeah, I know which one you're talking about, but I don't remember what it was called either.
Yeah, Simpsons Hit and Run. That's what it was.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, there it is. The Simpsons Arcade, its estimated ship date is November 30th. It will be $699.
That's a lot less than the multi-arcades I'm seeing.
Yeah, but it's also a lot smaller, too. Because it's like the one for size, you know, the kind that where you...
The arcade you, one up. It's,
right.
You can put it on a riser if you want to pay the extra money.
Mm-hmm. And the Miss... Ooh, wait. The Miss Pac-Man Galaga one would be a nice one to have.
Yeah. Is that from 1UP?
Yep.
How much are they for that one?
If I remember right, I thought it was 300, but let me look.
It'll come down to like 175 or something at some point.
Yeah. It's actually out of stock on their website. Yeah, so it might already be... See, that's the problem. Arcade 1UP is very seasonal. You know, they'll bring them out at Christmas, and that's it.
Well, if you wait until like February, then all the ones that didn't sell at Christmas are like $175.
Yeah. Now, you can't get, like, if you... someone recommended that you look on QVC. QVC has... Not these ones, but they have the kind that'll kind of like sit on your desk.
Oh, yeah, the super tiny ones.
Yeah, and those ones are about... the QVC one's 150 for most of them, which is not bad.
I still got to mod the one I have.
Which one did you have?
Space Invaders. Still works.
Okay.
Still good.
What were the other games on the Space Invader one?
Just Space Invaders and Space Invaders. I don't think it's Space Invaders 2. It's Space Invaders, like, revamped or something. Well, that's it. The two Space Invader games.
Yep. Another thing I noticed that Arcade 1UP's doing is they're making stools with arcade themes on them. Like, they have a Star Wars one. And, they got the X-Men one, too.
Yeah.
In Arcade 1UP.
I think I would rather build my own riser than pay for one of theirs.
Yeah. Yeah,
like
I get
$100 or something?
No, they're not that. I think the last time I looked, they were like 50.
Let me check.
So.
Arcade 1UP riser.
You can probably get one that has no branding on it for nothing or for lower than the one that matches.
Yeah, $50.
Yeah. They're not that expensive for the risers.
Considering I can get some plywood and make my own.
Oh, they even have a Dragon's Lair and Space Ace one. And Pong.
Yeah, prices are a little high for Arcade 1UP in general.
Yep.
$868 for the Mortal Kombat arcade machine. That would be a nice one to have, though.
Now, at the Pac-Man ones, I like the 4. It's got wood.
Oh, they got the Arcade 1UP Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles arcade machine. That was a fun arcade game. I hated it, but it was fun.
That was a good one. Let's see if the Star Wars one is $500 at Walmart.com.
These bar top ones are kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm seriously considering those. plop it on.
Just for the smaller size, easier portability, probably.
Yep.
A lot easier to hack too.
And I think like the Pac-Man one would be actually usable, because really, other than the only time you have to hit a button is to start the game. That's it. The rest of the time you're just using the joystick, and as long as the joystick is big enough for your fat mitt to get around it, then you can play it.
But yeah, I'm looking up Bar Tops right now, and this mini arcade is like way too small. I mean, barely larger than a controller, and yeah, it'd be really hard to use that joystick and the buttons at the same time.
Yep. So games like, I think a game like Pac-Man could. The Space Invaders Countercade has Space Invaders. I'm trying to see which other game was on it. Oh, Space Invaders Color. Woohoo. The nice thing about the countercades are, though, is they're already assembled. You just pull them out of the box, you're ready to go. Yeah.
Yep.
So I have to think about what I want to record for Saturday's in this living in the shade of an 80s arcade. Last week I did one on music inspired by video games. Like, did you know that Buckner and Garcia, who did Pac-Man Fever, also did one for Asteroids? They did one for Centipede.
Centipede sounds like a... Have you ever listened to the Centipede song?
Yes, I have.
It sounds like an old man cruising for little kids.
Kind of does.
This is so weird. I think I still have it somewhere. I have the cassette that they did.
Pac-Man Fever.
You got Pedo Fever? Pedo Fever?
Yeah, Pedo Fever. So yeah, Pac-Man, I think Berserk was on. There was a song about Berserk on there too. Wasn't there?
Yes, there was.
Well, go ahead, rattle off the songs, man, since you did the show on it.
Well, let's see. I want to see if I have the whole list, because I only got a few. Like, I only had a top five list. Oh. The Centipede one. Hyperspace, which was the Asteroid one.
I'm trying to see. It was Buckner and Garcia.
They're from Ohio, too.
They did do the Donkey Kong, but I don't know if that one was on the
album. Here's what the album has on it. It has Pac-Man Fever, obviously. Right. Froggy's Lament.
That's Frogger. Yep. I remember that.
Ode to a Centipede.
Yep.
And Do the Donkey Kong.
Ah, I guess it was on there.
Yep. Hyperspace, which is Asteroids. The Defender, which is Defender. Mousetrap, which is Mousetrap, and Going Berserk.
I don't remember Mousetrap. The song.
I remember the game, but I don't remember the song either. Because that's kind of a random... That's probably, of all the games that are on this song list, that's probably the least popular one.
I'm trying to remember what Mousetrap the game looked like. Oh, yeah, okay.
It's like Pac-Man.
Yeah, like Pac-Man with cats and a mouse, right?
That's what it looks like.
Why do I... Mappy, what, the arcade game, remember that?
Mappy, yeah, I remember Mappy. I also remember, Tapper's what it was called, but then in some arcades you had Root Beer Tapper, because you can't advertise alcohol to the kids.
Yeah, Root Beer Tapper. So, just double checking. Was it essentially Kangaroo and Popeye almost like the same game?
There were a lot of games that were re-cloned and reskinned.
It's even worse now. I mean, yeah. Go to freaking Dave and Buster's, and every sit-down race game is essentially the same game with different graphics.
Oh, yeah.
If you played one, you've played them all.
Yeah, unless you're going to a real authentic retro arcade type place, I think most of those places these days, if it's not, it's just like ticket-based games, and then you know, it's just like the multi-person racing games.
Occasionally, and
shooting games.
That's what I'm saying. Occasionally, you can get a good, like, nostalgia game. Like, there was a, I think it was a Space Invader game. It wasn't the original Space Invader, but it was like a sit-down one, and you had like cannons that you'd move around. And I think there was a Pac-Man game that was like that too, but it was. It's like whoever designed these things thought that the old video games were all made with LEDs, because that's what these are made with. Just big giant LED panels.
Dun dun.
Yep.
Yeah.
Kangaroo Arcade.
Hey, actually, I'm looking at pictures. It's not an exact rip, but they're very similar gameplay style. It's just I always, for some
damn,
reason, I always remember
look similar.
Kangaroo and Popeye being very, very similar.
Popeye had the steps on either side of the lower level.
Right. And I think my vision of those games were tainted by the ColecoVision version of both of them, which was not an exact replication of the arcade. It, like the Atari 2600, even though it was better graphics, did take some liberties in presenting the ports.
Yeah, I'm back.
There he is. That's like, now you see, you talked about ColecoVision. Now, do you remember the Coleco Atom computer?
Oh, it rings a bell.
Yeah, it's very similar to the ColecoVision, but you had to, one thing you had to be careful of with that was you had to, it had dual cassette drives, which was unique for a computer back in the day, but you had to remember to take your cassettes out before you powered it on, because there was a big enough magnetic pulse through the cassette drive that it would erase your cassette tapes. Not to mention the fact it came with everything. So it came with a printer, came with a machine. The only thing it didn't come with was like a monitor or something, because you just hooked it up to your TV. All right.
Wait. Did it come with it didn't come with a disk drive, did it?
No, it had cassette drive.
Yeah, because okay, you can get a disk drive for it. I'm looking at the picture here. I was going to say, if it came with a disk drive, I don't see why they would put the cassettes on there.
Yeah, the only thing it didn't come with was that disk drive, all right, or a monitor, okay? And in order to power the computer on, you had to have the printer connected to it as well, because apparently the power supply for the whole system was built into the printer.
Wow.
Why would you want dual cassettes?
I don't know, man. When I'm thinking retro computers, I'm not thinking that's gonna be able to copy cassette. I guess you could dub a program from one cassette drive to the other one. I don't know, man. I never had one. I'm not gonna lie. I kind of wanted one, just like I wanted the Mattel Aquarius. But I'm glad I didn't have either of them back in that time because they were awful.
I bet you Wikipedia might tell me why I had two cassettes.
Possibility. Every time I look at the Atom, though, it reminds me of the PC Junior. Which I did get to play with a PC Junior. My roommate in college had a PC Junior, and that thing sucked. The worst computer...
This time they had to have gotten him.
No.
Worst, what?
Worst computer I ever used was the PC Junior. Worst PC. There must be a lag.
No, I'm just glancing through here. I'm not seeing anything as to why it had a two cassette drives on there.
Well, it's probably one of those things like, why did the Nintendo 64 have a port on the bottom it never used in the United States? They did use it in Japan, though, for the DD64. Which I really would love to play. You have to get the Japan system in order to play Nintendo DD64 games.
Oh, you know what? I was thinking, I was trying to remember whether the 64 had this or not, but it was the GameCube. The GameCube had a port on the bottom, and you could plug. I know one of the expansion things that I had for the GameCube was a Game Boy adapter where you could play the Game Boy games on it.
Because I'm thinking,
I thought that something was available for the 64, and that might have been a cartridge.
The only thing I remember them actually using a lot was the memory. And true story on that, the memory expansion was needed by, and I think the game that drove that was Donkey Kong Country. Because apparently there was a bug in the game code in Donkey Kong Country that if they expanded the RAM in it, it didn't affect it. So rather than fix the bug, they just threw the memory pack into the cartridge box with it.
And Star Fox came with the Rumble Pack. I remember that. Ooh.
Yeah, the Rumble Pack. Yeah. Yeah, I'd say the Nintendo 64 followed by the GameCube were probably my two favorite Nintendo systems.
Yeah, I love the 64.
Yep. The games are just so classic. Super Mario 64 was one of the best Marios ever. And one of the most underrated Marios ever was the Sunshine one on the GameCube.
Mario Sunshine.
thought you were going to say Super Mario 64.
No, Super Mario 64 was... It's deserving of every accolade it could get. It was one of the best ones they ever had, I think. Haven't beat it.
I think I told you this a couple weeks ago. I can't... I got to the point I couldn't play the Mario games anymore. I just get too frustrated at the...
Yeah.
You know what I think it is? I truly...
Yeah, but tell me what? You didn't have those calluses on your thumbs when the Nintendo first came out and you first got your hands on Super Mario Brothers.
Wait, you talking about the original Nintendo Entertainment
the
System?
The NES?
The
oh,
NES.
Oh my god, the anger and frustration I had.
Those giant calluses.
Yeah, I had such... It was such a paradigm shift to go from a joystick to a keypad.
To the D-pad, yeah.
Yeah. At the time. You're right, I did. And, yeah, so my problem now is I thought the GameCube controller for Super Mario Sunshine, that was pretty decent controller, but the Switch controllers I don't think are as up to the quality as the old controllers used to be.
The GameCube was my favorite controller.
I always have a problem with precision on Switch controllers. Yep.
The GameCube was, to me, I thought the GameCube controller was about perfect. The Nintendo's, the 64 controller wasn't too bad. I did like that one. Although it depends on which version you had, because if you had the one with the concentric rings on the thumbstick, that would like tear your thumb up something fierce on some games, like the Mario Party games.
Now, those calluses from the original Nintendo, did those fade or did they come off in a bloody mess?
Yep.
I never had a bloody mess, so they just faded on me.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. I'll get, it's funny. I'll get calluses like that. Like I was putting together some IKEA-style furniture. I got two dressers from Amazon.com. So I finally have my clothes in a dresser. And fortunately, when I put those together, I used I have this I'm trying to remember the name of the screwdriver. I bought it at Sam's Club. It came with a kit with bits on it, in it, I should say. But instead of just screwing it in like a normal screwdriver, you can basically twist it back and forth, left and right, and it will. Basically, it's like a ratcheting screwdriver is what it is. And it's got a switch on it that you can, you can push the switch down for screwing it down, or you can flip the switch back for screwing it, unscrewing it, and that is much easier on my hands than just a regular old screwdriver, because the regular screwdriver is... tore my hand up pretty good when I was putting together a couple nightstands I got from my IKEA, but it's weird stuff like that when I'm getting older.
Well, they make more. They make electric screwdrivers and drills.
But you don't want to use those when you're putting together that particle board based.
Well, if you're using, don't use a drill. Then you use one of the electric screwdrivers, and those things don't have enough torque to tear anything up.
There you go. Yeah, that might be the thing to use on those. I think I had one somewhere, but I probably use it. That's part of my problem is the battery packs in those things just don't have a great lifetime. In fact,
my problem is that when I buy tools like that, they get up and walk away.
That too. But like my current cordless drill, doesn't have an IMH packs or lithium ion packs. It has NiCad battery packs. And it's not that old either. It still had NiCad packs on it. So I need to eventually replace that at some point to get more modern battery packs that last longer. But
almost that time, boys.
Yeah.
It is. It is.
Oh, you got one. What? You got what?
Well, I was going to say, I have a wedding to go to this weekend.
Your wedding?
My nephew. No, my nephew's wedding. He's getting finally marrying his baby mama.
Congratulations.
Yeah, she's really nice. And her kids are nice, too. So.
What I was going to say earlier is I was introduced to this new service. Again, by Google. Hooray! Yay, Google, because we're in a Google Cloud, right?
Yeah.
It's called Workload Identity. And
okay.
What it is, and I'm guessing Amazon might have something like this, but when your application needs to utilize Google services like PubSub or Google Storage, Cloud Storage, whatever, their database. There's a couple different ways you could do it, but generally speaking, you create a service account for that application and you apply the service account to the application. Now, there's a couple of ways that you can do it, depending on what language you're writing in, but by and large, the way that they say the easiest way to do it is when you create a service account, you get a key file for it, which is a JSON key that you can then put onto the application. And you either provide, depending on how it's coded, the client, what version it's using, you could just specify, like, here's the key and here's the project ID and stuff like that. Or you could set an environmental variable which points to the JSON key that's stored in the file system, and it'll read it and use those credentials. So that's one way to do it. But with workload identity, so in all those ways, what you've had to do in the past is figure out how to get the credentials into your container when you run it. And so we generally solve that by using Vault. So when the application starts up, or the container starts up, it goes out and it reaches to a HashiCorp vault.
HashiCorp vault, yeah.
Yeah, and it pulls the secrets out of vault like that. Now, when we do that, we have a actual sidecar container that runs in the pod that has the vault authentication agent in it. So then it just uses that vault authentication agent to authenticate and pull the secrets from the vault. Other ways that you could do it, Kubernetes has a secret store in it. You can put the credentials in the Kubernetes secret store. But
AWS IAM, too.
Yeah. So, yes. But what workload identity does is it circumvents all of the necessity, all the need to do that, and it integrates pulling that key from the Google authentication service with Kubernetes secret service, I think it is. So there's an API that's built into Google's Kubernetes, which will retrieve that information and make it available to the container, so you don't have to pull it out of Kubernetes secrets or anywhere else. And it sounds like a great thing, right? And that would work great. The only problem is when I was thinking about this and whether we could apply it, how we would apply it in our side, is it kind of like doesn't it takes care of 1/3 of our continuous integration environment, right? So that's great if you're going to pull it when you're running the container, but what do we do for testing the container? Because we don't run the container in Kubernetes to test it. We're either running it in, it used to be in Jenkins, would build the container and then test it. Or right now we're doing GitHub Actions, so it does it in GitHub, builds a container and tests it and everything. That's not running in Kubernetes, so it makes it difficult to use that same authentication method to get the service account in there. And similarly, when you're building the application, you want to run it locally for testing purposes. Workload identity doesn't do us any good there either. So I don't know. I was like excited at first, and then the reality set in, and I was kind of bummed.
See, I'm not working too much with containers just yet. I don't know of anything that's similar in AWS. The only thing I can think is maybe their IAM service, which you can use everywhere to authenticate users. But I don't know. I don't know. Most of our authentication, at least for our applications, come from either ADFS through a federated AD with ADFS, usually using Azure ADFS. Or I think there's some that use, we have a few clients that use Okta with our apps. Which apparently that works through, we use, WS02 to be the stand between, you know, we call it, Elution Identity Service, but essentially it's WS02 essentially, where you set that up, in there. So instead of the normal login page, for example, for the UI that we use, you get presented with the whatever your identity provider's login page is. So if it's Okta, you'll get presented with Okta, or you might have an Okta chiclet. With ADFS, it's just a standard, same kind of login screen you see if you use Microsoft Office 365. So, and that's at least from the login side of things. Now for our automation, we're going to use HashiCorp Vault to store all the passwords. We're still kind of building. It's mostly built out now. We just have to, go to the old key passes that we had and, import certain things, like, cause we are like three different, the first things that we use was key passes. That they tried to migrate the key passes to AWS secrets first. And what we found out is when they did that migration is if you didn't have a username listed in key pass, which is possible, you can just put the password in there. Because there's certain things, at least within our infrastructure, that just has a key store password. It doesn't have a username associated with that key store password, okay, or a vault password, like for a password vault on an application, all right. So those ones, neither of those actually have a username. Same thing with storing our shared secrets in KeePass. Those didn't have usernames, so those all got lost. We still had them because they didn't wax the key passes, but anyway. Then they decided, well, we're going to migrate away from AWS Secrets and move it to HashiCorp Vault because it's cheaper for some reason. All right, so we're most of the way through setting things up with Vault. We just need to get we may have to have a bunch of tickets to have some of the juniors import the ones that didn't make it in and put them in the Vault so we have them. But since Vault works with the Jenkins and some of the other things in the pipelines stuff we're going to be implementing, so that's all going to be set up for that. So we're going to be good with that. But generally, we don't really use the IAM for much on the Amazon side of things except for us managing AWS. That's it. So our applications aren't authenticated by IAM. So...
Yeah. All right, guys, I'm gonna get going.
Yeah, we gotta close this up.
Yeah. Yep.
Talk to y'all later.
All right, we'll play this out. Here we go. Your promos.
Oh my God,
it's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community.
you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
I am short.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? With my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making it pretty young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah. Hey, I got a workaround so I can get food delivered.
What do we have to do?
Well, our house isn't in Google Maps yet, but the sales office for our builder is.
Oh, yeah?
So, yesterday I had Burger King delivered down there. I just drove down my car and waited for the guy down at the office there and drove it back. Granted, it's a lot less driving than driving to Burger King, which is actually on the other side of our town from us right now. But because for some whatever reason, my son wanted Burger King. I don't know why.
Hey, Joel, just go into Google Maps and make an update.
I did that.
What was that?
It still hasn't. That was more Nancy.
Oh.
I did that, and it still hasn't hit Google update yet. OpenStreetMap doesn't have it yet either, so I could go. In fact, I probably should go and submit it there, but I know it's in Waze. So since Waze is owned by Google, my hope is that it starts to hit Google soon. But I'm more hoping now that they finally get us our mailbox keys, because we get mail, but because we don't have keys, they won't, for whatever reason, they won't just put it on the porch. And it doesn't really dawn on them that in places where they have curbside delivery, it's just the same as sitting it on your porch. It really is. But, and we're home all the time anyway, and I have the doorbell camera, so I know when somebody's at the door and we're all three in here, I know they're there. But Amazon has no problem finding us. Instacart can find us. But any, like I said, all of them, since all the food delivery services, I ranted about this a little bit last week, all the food delivery services use Google Maps. And since we're not Google Maps yet, yeah, we'll get there, though.
Oh, yeah. All right, say goodnight, Joel.
Good night, Joel.
I'm back.
What's up, Pat?
How you doing?
Oy, oy, oy. And there's Joel.
I'm here.
You got a lot of rain, Joel?
Today, it rained a little bit.
Yeah, we're starting to get clipped by the edge of it down here now.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a bunch last week. It's like we went out to dinner Wednesday night, and that was like right after work and right before the show. I got home. And it was storming like right when we went to go to dinner, but then right in the middle of the show, we lost power and it was out till after the show. And I tried to hook up with my phone, and apparently Verizon doesn't do very well at my house. It works, you know, like for phone calls and like little uploading pictures and stuff like that. But anytime he's trying to stress it, it's just too much. Well. it's either that or maybe because of the fact that we had no power, everybody else was on their phones dinking around, you know. But all back now. Till I think about getting a generator. And I'm on my yoga book tonight because I fixed the battery in it. And yep, it was poofy.
Got a new one?
Yep, $50. Not counting the now that was another 10 because I didn't have the Torx bits that I needed, so I had to buy some of those too. So we'll talk a little bit about how easy of a replacement. I actually missing one screw. It's on the carpet somewhere, and I can't find it.
Oh, don't you love that?
Yep. Well, they're tiny, tiny, man. Ugh. Then I got a rant about, I don't know how much you guys heard about the Pixel 6, but I got a rant about that. So that'll be good.
You got one?
No.
No, he just has a rant.
No, it's just a rant about it, because, you know, we'll get into it on the show. Of course, now I gotta figure out how to turn off the stupid voice thing and mumble. There we go, it's off.
Alright.
So, hopefully, I'll tune and I can get rid of a couple.
Don't be hating on my household attire, okay? I don't go to Walmart like this.
Yes, he does. Alright, I need to check in on work Slack for a minute, so go ahead and start the show.
Oh, when you're ready. Thank you. Yes, when I'm ready, thank you. I'll do a quick holding. She was very vocal today. Well, and I went up to see her, and she wanted to come out of the cage so bad. And I said, nope.
You got a bird down?
No, my daughter, Avery, does.
Oh, God.
But she actually had a, what's the bird you first got? What kind? Quaker parrot. She had a Quaker parrot. And
oh, cute.
And now that she's going to be starting a job and school, she wanted to get it some company so it wouldn't be alone. So now there's a cockatiel, too.
Awesome.
Very, very sweet.
Yes. And so, yeah. They are. She's very happy. Very happy with her birds. All right, where am I? Who is this? What am I doing here? Oh, okay, yeah. All right, everybody ready? Because Joel gave us permission to start.
Yeah, yeah.
Here we go. This is this? Should have
episode 1000.
No, not yet. We're close. I think it's 9. It's only 9:18. I thought it was 9:20, but nope, 9:18. Here we go.